here in Decorah, we're pretty confident we have more solar per capita than any other town in Iowa now, and possibly any other town in the Midwest.
Iowa isn't just the land of knee-high corn and presidential candidates. It's also home to Winnesheik County, which supports one of the highest solar uptake rates in the nation. That amazing result is largely thanks to the Winnesheik Energy District. In November 2015, Andy Johnson, the director of the Winnesheik Energy District, joined John Farrell to talk about modeling the Soil and Conservation District for energy and how the Energy District is enabling energy efficiency and renewable energy in Winnesheik County. This is Local Energy Rules, a podcast sharing powerful stories about local renewable energy.
So Andy, I think a big overarching question that would be useful to start with would be to focus on this issue of ownership, because an energy district is focused on the development of local energy resources, aiding local residents and businesses. Why does it matter who owns renewable energy resources?
Yeah, good question, because we haven't mostly until now, except that we did long ago. And it's interesting, we have a little building not far from our office here in Decorah, a small town in northeast Iowa, that few people realize, but it's actually the original municipal utility where they had a wood-fired boiler there generating energy and electric, and that was those were the first wires sent out and around town. And so in the early days, many folks owned their own energy, including electrical and grid, but pretty rapidly that became consolidated into the regulated monopoly system we have now, certainly on the electrical side. And there were good reasons for that. It was certainly economy of scale-wise, the most efficient economically and resource-wise for probably quite a number of decades. But now that's changed, and it's changed so fast that the energy world is pretty much in a turmoil, but it's opening up tremendous opportunities for localism, for local economies, for local people, communities, and customers. And essentially where we've come to, we've only been around as an organization for about 6 years now, since, well, we started in 2009. And just in that time, we have certainly seen, at least in the energy world, the conversation and debate shift almost entirely from whether the future is renewables. A lot of people out there may think, well, we're still, you know, we're never going to get there, we're never going to get there. Within the energy world, and certainly within our world, even in northeast Iowa, it's a done deal. The future of energy is renewable energy. The main questions that remain are how fast will we get there, and will it be fast enough, especially on the climate side? And who will own it? Because the utilities have woken up, again, really quickly in the last few years. A few of them were aware of this a while back, but most of them have been a little bit slow to the table, and they're realizing that their customers and their communities and local places everywhere are realizing that they would like to take some ownership of this opportunity, of this resource, of this need. And so, especially with distributed solar technology, that's now an option. It's an economical option for customers and communities. And the dollars and cents are huge. So, you know, in terms of why it matters, that energy, our energy world, especially the electrical grid, is going to transform almost entirely probably in the next generation, couple decades, two, three decades, from what it's been for the last century. And in that transition, communities and customers have a tremendous economic opportunity to own much of those assets and resources and keep dollars local. And just one little example, our here small rural county in northeast Iowa, Winnesheik, probably we spend about $100 million a year on energy. Nobody knows exactly because we can't get the numbers, but that's a lot of money, and most of it leaves right out the power and gas lines, right out the fertilizer purchases. So, you know, to the degree those dollars can be kept local and recirculated in a local economy, that's one of the biggest pieces of the local economy. And it may be the biggest piece in terms of opportunities for local economic churning and development. So at the same time as we're all working for a healthier world and a better climate, we're also working for local economies.
So tell me a bit about how an energy district like the Winnesheik District can help the communities there, help individuals, help businesses reverse that flow of dollars that's leaving the community.
Right. So efficiency and renewables are essentially the two parts to one big game here. And we can all save tremendously on efficiency. It's not very sexy. And it's not always easy to accomplish. The numbers out there are always thrown around and said, well, 20 to 30% of just about everybody's energy use, whether it's a business or a home or a farm or whatnot, could easily be saved through efficiency. And it's true that it could be a save through efficiency, but it's not always easy, especially when you talk, for example, whole building weatherization, insulation and shell. So a lot of what we do actually try to do is actual boots on the ground technical assistance. There are a lot of great local energy efforts out and around and doing good things. What most of them don't do is that sort of technical analysis and implementation with customers. And it's not easy. There's good reasons why people don't do it. Traditionally, it's been understood as energy auditing. Many people have had an energy audit. Most, unfortunately, that have had an energy audit haven't actually implemented any major changes from it. That's just the way the industry has evolved over the years. So what we try to do is a much broader level of energy analysis than a typical audit. We try to include the efficiency and renewables opportunities. We look carefully at the economics, and then we try and help people make those changes. And we've done this with hundreds of homes and businesses and now farms, increasingly here in Northeast Iowa, and to conversion rates of 50 to 95% in terms of projects that actually get done. So that work is a little bit costly and it's a little bit intense, but we're seeing really great results there. So, of course, the other side of what we do is a lot of the engagement, outreach, education, engagement, awareness, and working directly on projects with partners like local governments, helping folks understand, hey, y'all could build a solar array. Here's how it works. Here's how third-party ownership works. Here are how all the incentives work. And essentially being the catalyst that drives change at the local level.
So are the electric utilities, you kind of mentioned how, you know, we evolved from local ownership to this monopoly structure, you know, and there were good reasons for it at the time. Are the utilities, gas and electric, helping or hindering the work that you're doing with the energy district? You know, and maybe talk about that particularly with regards to either third-party ownership of solar, which we can explain a little bit, or community solar.
Right. We're working pretty hard on community solar, but it's not something that the utilities are especially open to, nor are they open to third-party ownership. In general, the utility industry is not especially friendly to local ownership. But they have reason to be. They're a business. You know, most utilities are a business. Most customers are served by investor-owned utilities, and the investor-owned utilities, of course, are in it to make a profit for investors. And that's the way our economy works. And so it's understandable. We don't have to have this discussion framed as good versus evil. But to the degree to which investor-owned utilities are in it to generate profits for their investors, those profits are not staying here in the local economy. And so we see the regulatory battles essentially really heating up very quickly all over the country, mostly at the state level. I actually see a real divergence potentially of the utility business models, however, because on the one hand you have the investor-owned utilities, and their goal is to generate profits for investors. If by almost definition those profits come out of the local communities, and that's what we're trying to keep in the local communities. On the other hand, we have the co-op and municipal utilities, which are, by definition, existing for the good of their customer owners, which is local. So it's the city or it's the rural residents that own the rural electric co-op. And those organizations are there only for the good of their communities and their customers to provide the energy needed. And so, you know, though they've all seen themselves and in most cases are still seeing themselves as one industry and speaking with one voice and lobbying and politically, I think that's starting to change because the co-ops, the customer-owned utilities are seeing the demands and responding to the demands of their members and their local governments and their communities. And the investor-owned utilities are essentially still a little bit between a rock and a hard place. Well, yes, we would like to work with communities and we would like to respond to customers, but that potentially takes a hit to our bottom line. So there are some real challenges there.
I think you're doing a beautiful job of anticipating my questions in our conversation here. You know, the energy system, as we've discussed, is kind of dominated by monopoly incumbents that are regulated at the state level. And my question here, which you've already partly answered, I think, in terms of the different kinds of utilities, co-ops or municipal or investor-owned, is how can local communities have a say? Are there ways, if your community doesn't own its own utility, if you're not a co-op member or not a resident of a city that has its own utility, that you can have more decision-making power, that you can help keep those dollars local without having to be a utility shareholder?
Right. Those are tough questions, and there are a few options, but they aren't easy ones. We've been struggling with them right here in Decorah. We have a couple RECs that we work with and increasingly work with, and they're increasingly responding to the member concerns. We don't have a municipal electric utility here in town or gas in our main county seat town of Decorah. We're working, and so we've been working with Alliant Energy. And we've been actually working pretty closely with Alliant Energy on some negotiations, trying to work towards community solar, trying to work towards the way in which the utility could collaborate with the town and with customers on, say, one large array that people could subscribe to and have at least sort of a partial ownership. It's been a tough uphill battle, hasn't gone anywhere yet. We're in the middle of negotiations as well, saying, well, okay, essentially if large-scale community solar isn't an option, which is in most states is essentially a state policy step that needs to be taken, like in Minnesota, okay, instead of a community solar project open to all of your customers locally, let's talk with the local, large local public entities, because they represent the rest of us, the local government, the city, the county, our local hospital, community college, liberal arts college, are all involved in a collaborative we've been working on here, essentially saying, Alliant, let's build a big, big solar array, relatively big as in megawatts, not kilowatts, somewhere where it fits your grid and where it's not in the middle of town, and essentially let your largest local customers build and own pieces of that and credit their bill, just as if they would if they built arrays on their rooftops, which they could do now in some places. But that would essentially provide potential real benefits to the grid in large amounts of solar being out here in Alliant distribution grid where the peak power has some match and some real value in the frequency and voltage regulation. And it would also allow the local governments to make those fiduciary investments that are good for their citizens and their customers. Well, that hasn't gone anywhere yet either. So you can try. You can try to talk to utility. Another route that you have is to try to talk to your regulators, which we're also doing here in Iowa. We're pretty active in the Iowa Utilities Board cases, as well as talking to policymakers, because so much of this utility world is regulated at the state level. There's a fair amount of federal impact, but the state regulators make the rules in most cases for their utilities. So you talk to your state utility regulator, you talk to your policymakers, and see if you can't work on that community solar and net metering and other policies. Another thing you can do, which is maybe a little bit more extreme, but certainly it's been done in Iowa by more communities than just about anywhere in the country on a per capita basis, is pursue the municipalization option. Because again, those utilities that are owned and serve only their own customers locally, municipal utilities and co-ops, they're going to eventually, sooner or later, be working in the best interest of their customers and moving towards 100% renewables, probably faster than the rest of the utility model. So Decorah, our county seat town here, just passed two days ago on election day, a fiber municipal, the beginnings of a fiber broadband utility with 93% of the vote. So 93% voted in favor of creating a broadband utility here in Decorah, and 7% voted apparently not to. That's a pretty powerful statement of localism, of local needs meeting, local desires, and local action to meet those needs. So on the energy side and electrical side, well, the same thing can happen. And hopefully the utilities will in the rapidly changing energy world, will increasingly and more rapidly work with their customers. But if not, we have to do what we can for our communities.
Could you share one or two accomplishments from your work at the Energy District, whether it's installation of solar? You already referenced the really high conversion rate in terms of the people you engage with adopting energy efficiency and renewable energy measures. But also that, do you have advice for how to do that? You know, what is it that makes that community engagement successful? And I'm thinking, for example, about Minneapolis with a partnership, a unique partnership with its investor-owned utilities, seeking ways to reach more people and to go deeper than the traditional efforts have done.
Right. Yeah, well, that is an important part of the energy district model, and it's not easy. But energy districts are essentially meant to be the boots on the ground, as well as the preachers of what can happen and the engagers of citizenry. So we've really worked hard at that, and we can't say by any means in a few short years that every citizen of Winnesee County is great and up and a firm supporter of renewable energy and has done all their efficiency. But we're really moving down that path quickly. We've done a great deal of efficiency, as we mentioned. Renewable energy is on a tear here, and we've worked with all kinds of partners, for example, the community college there and Luther College and our entities and solar installers. So there's a lot of catalyzing that can be done when you have an organization whose mission is to do it. Of course, it takes energy to build that organization. Here in Decorah, we're pretty confident we have more solar per capita than any other town in Iowa now, and possibly any other town in the Midwest. It's really rolling along. And again, it's not easy to build those organizations, to try something new that's not just a subset of, say, a city government or a county government or something else. But it pays dividends, and part of what we're really excited about now is that we're talking with neighboring counties and startup groups nearby and far away about starting an energy district and a network of energy districts. And we think that'll really create increasing movement, awareness, power, and everything else. So we'll share resources, we'll share some services, but everyone needs that local mouthpiece and catalyst for change. So.
That was Andy Johnson, the director of the Winnesheek Energy District, talking to John Farrell, director of ILSR's Energy Democracy Initiative. More information on energy districts and other policies and practices can be found on ILSR.org, where you can also find 34 more local energy rules podcasts. Until next time, keep your energy local, and thanks for listening.